Good morning, everybody. It's good to be back.
Nice to have you here.
It's very good to be back. I think we may yet do it. We begin today chapter 21, and chapter 21 is really the beginning of the end of Sefer Shmuel, Shmuel Bet. It's chapters 21 through 24, which is the end of the Sefer. They are really a summation of what has taken place in the Sefer. We're going to see that there's a symmetry between the beginning of Shmuel and the end of Shmuel. At the beginning of Shmuel, we have the prayer of Hannah. At the end of Shmuel, we're going to have the prayer of David. Chapter 22 is going to be the great prayer of David. There will also be a similarity at the end of Shmuel to the end of Shoftim. At the end of Shoftim, there are a number of chapters that deal with events that had taken place during the entire period of the Shoftim, and for one reason or another were not placed in their historic context, and now at the end, as the summation begins, it's mentioned. This chapter, certainly the first half of chapter 21, is going to be an extremely painful one and a difficult one. All that I ask is that let's reserve judgment on its meaning and its significance and what the message of the parak is until we have learned it fully. There are going to be serious difficulties that we will we'll have to deal with, and it most probably will be at the end that we're going to have to depend on the words of Chazal in order to fully understand what happened here. Now let's learn. Vayehi ra'av b'mei David. There was a famine in the days of David. Chapter 21. Vayehi ra'av b'mei David. There was a famine in the days of David. Shalosh shanim shana acharei shana. 3 years, but not 3 years at different times. 3 years in a row. A period of 3 years during which there was a famine. Vayevakesh David et pnei Hashem. And David sought before God. He turns to God and he wants to know, why is there a famine in the land? The Mefarshim say that Vayevakesh David et pnei Hashem usually means that he came before the Kohen to ask of the Urim V'Tumim, in a sense to ask directly from God. So it is to the Kohen and to the Urim V'Tumim. Vayevakesh David et pnei Hashem also means that he prayed before God. But since here there's going to be a response, the response comes from someplace, and the only response that he could be getting is from the Urim V'Tumim. So he prays that the Urim V'Tumim should tell him, why has this famine plagued the land?
Why did he wait so long?
Sarah asked a very good question. Why did he wait so long? So I'll read to you what Chazal say, why he waited so long. Chazal said the following. Shana Nishona Amalehem, during the first year, he said, Shema Ovde Avoda Zora Yesh Bechem, maybe there are idolaters in your midst. Why? Because what are we saying, Shema? Va'avadetem Alehim Akedim, you will worship other gods, then Va'atzar Et Hashamayim, he will close up and lock up the heavens. So the first year, he assumed that there are idolaters. What is one supposed to do? The famous Gemara that says, Haroe Yisurim Boim Olav, a person who sees that suffering is befalling him, Yefashvesh B'masav. So you have to take stock and see, what have we done wrong? What has gone wrong? So therefore the first year he thought that the Jews were idolaters. So you know what he did? Batku V'lo Matzu. They checked through Klal Yisrael, and you understand they didn't find idolatry by Klal Yisrael. I'm happy you asked the question, because the Medrash is going to be so terribly important for an understanding. Thank you, an understanding of the whole chapter. Shnia, during the second year, he said, maybe there are over the Aveira. There are people who are doing all sorts of sins. Dichtiv, because it says, a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, that because Israel sinned, Vayimanu Revivim, the rain was withheld, umalkosh lo haya, and the second rains did not come. Badku, so they investigated to understand for lo matzu. They didn't find sinners. Do you know what kind of a Klal Yisrael we are talking about? It's awesome! Shlishis, in the third year, Omalahem, he said to them, Shema poskei tzedaka berabim yezbachem ve'ein notnim. Maybe there are people who make pledges to give charity in public. They make their pledges, and then they don't pay. Why is that so terrible? And what's the relationship between that and no rain? So the Medrash brings a pasuk in Mishlei that says Nisi'im v'ruach v'geshem ayin. That there's wind. In other words, a lot of wind. But no rain. When is there a lot of wind? In other words, the wind blows, and sort of it looks like it's going to start raining, and there is no rain. That's people who make pledges, but don't keep their pledges. So it turns out that there was a lot of air, there was a lot of wind, but nothing came at the end. Bodku v'lo matzu. So they looked for that, to find out if there were people like that, v'lo matzu, and they didn't find. Do you understand what we're saying over here? That for 3 years, they looked and searched by Klal Yisrael to find what sin could conceivably have been the reason why there's no rain. And they found nothing. Does it give us a picture of what Klal Yisrael looks like in the days of David? This is a dramatic and a powerful portrait of a pious people. How do you like that? You like that? A powerful portrait of a pious people. That's what it is. Which means, therefore, that David has no choice but to turn to God, so that God should tell him, why has there been a famine for 3 years? Now, I know that Sarah is going to ask, why is there a space in the middle of the pasuk? So she should already know from previous times that usually when there is a request made of God, there is always the separation, sort of the pause, to separate speech of man from the speech of God. God's response comes after the pause. Vayomer Hashem, God said, El Sha'ul ve'el Beit Hadamim al Asher heimitat ha-givonim. The reason for the famine is, it is because of Sha'ul El before I should say it, El and Al are usually interchangeable. Sometimes you have them together, like El, Al. But otherwise, very often in Tanakh, you're going to have El in place of Al, and Al in place of El. Over here it means Al Sha'ul, it's about Sha'ul, Val Beit Hadamim, the house of blood, and here in the same pasuk, you could have used El and they used Al, or Al and they used El. Al Asher Himitat HaGivonim, that he had killed the Givonim. That's really going to be the story. And we're going to talk right away what this is. One of the Mefarshim says that David really asked three questions. The first, and he receives three responses. First he asked, who's guilty? Whose sin is it that has brought the lack of rain? So God answered, it was Sha'ul. So then the question was, well, what was it about Sha'ul? What sin was it? So God answered, El Beit HaDamim, because his house was a house of blood. And then he asked, more specifically, what blood that was spilled by Sha'ul is reason for this famine and the lack of rain? Our Asher Hemit et HaGivonim, that he had put to death the Givonim. We don't know yet what that means. We do know who the Givonim are. The Givonim really takes us back to the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, about third or fourth parak of Sefer Yehoshua. There were people who came to Yehoshua and told him that we have come from a distant and far land. They came with clothing that was torn and tattered, and shoes that seemed like they had gone and walked long distances. The bread and the food that they had was already dry and brittle, and they said that they want to make a treaty with Yehoshua, which he did, he made a treaty with them. And a few days later, they find out that these are people who really live in Eretz Canaan, not far from them, in a city called Givon. Givon was a large city, very close to the present site of... not far from Ramot, but further out, closer to Telstone. Telstone, Abu Ghosh, Kiryat Yadim, those were cities around Givon.
Somewhere in that area, but not quite.
In that area, I think that's someplace between Ramot and.
There's Givon Hadashah, which is, you know, where you take that new route, the conventional route, going to
the Makabi Hashmonai. Yes, going out the back way, going out of Yerushalayim the back way. So the truth is, further up over there, it's not too far from where Abu Ghosh and Kiryat Yarim are. And we don't want to mention that. All right. Now. Yes.
Happened quite a while ago, and here this generation that was obviously.
No. We're going to take it from that story to something that Shaul did.
Even Shaul was accused a generation ago. Here this generation that
was blameless,
sin free, and they
should be punished. So wait, let's see. Remember, that's one of the questions to be asked. Now, when did this whole story take place? Here also there are differences of opinion in the Mefarshim. Remember, how did the Perek begin? The parrot begins by saying, Vayihi, Vayihi Ra'av b'mei David. In the days of David, there was a famine. Now, if this would historically have happened following the rebellion of Absalom, then it would have begun by saying, Vayihi Acharei Chain, and it came to pass afterwards. Over here it just says, Vayihi Ra'av b'mei David. There was a famine in the days of David. Which really could mean any time during the period of the kingdom of David. That's why I had said originally that there's a similarity between the events that are going to be described in the next few chapters to the end of Sefer Shoftim, where, for example, the story of Pelegesh Begivah that had happened much earlier is mentioned at the end of Sefer Shoftim. There are a few stories there that say, well, in those days there was no king in Israel. People did that which was right in their own eyes. A number of stories at the end of Sefer Shoftim that really are out of their chronological order. Now, the last of the Shoftim, the one who precedes Shmuel, is really Shimshon. And the story of Shimshon is chapters 13, 14, 15. And what comes afterwards are sort of stories that are related to the period of the Shoftim, but are not brought in chronological order. This too, many of the Farshim say it didn't happen after the rebellion of Absalom. It happened earlier in the days of David. Certainly, remember when we started learning about the Merit of Absalom, according to some, it was already toward the last year of the reign of David. So there was no place or time left for 3 years of famine afterwards. So, therefore, it begins by saying, Vayehi Rav, be made David. Rav, a famine in the days of David, can mean any time during the period of David's reign. Alright, Vayikra HaMelech LaGivonim, the king called the Givonim, Vayomer Aleim, and he said to them, and here comes a parenthetical comment. And the parenthetical comment says a great deal. David calls the Givonim. Now, who are the Givonim? Who are the Givonim? And what was it that Shaul had done? The Givonim lo mi bnei Yisrael hema. The Givonim are not from the children of Israel. Ki im miyeter ha'amori. They were from the remnants of the Amori. Quite specifically, they were from the tribe of the Chivi. Ubnei Yisrael nishbu lahem. But the children of Israel had taken an oath, sworn to them that they were going to be part of the Jewish people. They were going to protect them. What happened at the end of that story in Yehoshua, when Yehoshua and the Jewish people find out that they have deceived them, that they're not from some place off distant, but Bekirbam and Yoshim, they are right in the middle, so there were those who wanted to kill, wipe out the Givonim. Yehoshua said, listen, we made an oath, B'Shem Hashem, we have used the name of God, and we have to keep the oath. We have to keep the oath. But what happened? By Yit name Yehoshua. Yehoshua made them, he appointed them, he placed upon them a responsibility from that day on and further to be Chotvei Eitzim v'Shoavei Mayim, the woodchoppers and the water carriers of the Jewish people. they were given a secondary status, and they became the wood king, the wood choppers and the water carriers for the Mishkan. And that's going to be important in terms of what was it that happened to the Givonim. It's important that the statement that the Gemara says, there's a beautiful Gemara in the Sefer Givonim that says, "V'ha-givonim lo b'mnei Yisrael hem, or b'givonim are not from the children of Israel." Says the Gemara there, "Shlosha simanim yesh bu'umazu." There are three very unique characteristics about this people, the Jewish people. They are Baishanim, Rachmanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. The Jewish people are Baishanim. They are a shy, shemivdik, yeah. Bashful. Now, it's to be Baishan can, of course, be something negative, but we're talking about Baishan in its very, very positive, something very positive about it. You know, we live in an age where, you know, everything has to be out there in the open, no mystery, it all hang out. Klal Yisrael are a people who are Baishanim. They are also Rachmanim. They are a merciful people. And they are Gomlei Chasadim. They are people who do acts of charity and kindness to one another. The Givonim here are going to demonstrate that they are cruel, unforgiving, and shameless. And that's what the Gemara learns from just these words, V'ha-Givonim, Lomi B'nei Yisrael Hema. Kiyim Miyeter Amor. This is, of course, after they have been living amongst the Jewish people now, I would say for 350 years. And in 350 years, Atzichepes Nish Tzugeklep, they didn't absorb, acclimatize, they just did not become assimilate. They didn't learn from the Jewish people 350 years. Ashalomi b'nei Yisrael ema. Vayivake shol lahakotam, v'kanoto livnei Yisrael v'Yehuda, and Shaul wanted to smite them in his zealousness, livnei Yisrael v'Yehuda, for the children of Israel and for Yehuda. A general rule in Tanakh. The word to be zealous or jealous for can be followed by a word that begins with a lamed or a word that begins with a bet. The brothers of Yosef, Vayikan'u bo echav. Vayikan'u bo echav. Pinchas, we're going to learn about Pinchas, tachat asher kinei le'elokav. Where a lamed follows the word zealousness, it's letov, it's good. When a beis follows the word kin'ah, then it's bad. Which means, therefore, the pasuk over here is saying that Shaul's intentions were good. He wanted to smite them, and he wanted to do it for good reason. And listen to the reasons that are brought by the by the Mepharshim. Listen to the reasons. Some of the Mepharshim said that following the destruction of the Mishkan, or following the destruction of Dov Ir HaKohanim, which of course was Shaul's fault. Shaul is the one who destroyed Dov Ir HaKohanim. The city of Givon is the place where in place of the Mishkan, a great bama, a great altar, was built in Givon. Givon became a city of God, a precursor, that which came before Yerushalayim. We're going to have later on at the beginning of Sefer Melachim, it is in Givon that God appears to Shlomo, and he asks him what it is that you want, and Shlomo says that he wants lev shomea, a heart that hears, you know, a lev basar, to be able to hear and judge his people Israel. And God tells him, because you didn't ask for gold and silver, and you didn't ask for power and might, I'm going to give you all of them, and I'm going to give you the lev shomea. That God appeared to him in Givon. Givon became the great spiritual center. And when they established this great spiritual center in Givon, Shaul wanted the Givonim out. He wanted to turn, he didn't want a divided city. He wanted a city that was going to be Kulo Hashem.
That's the one that says,
Shemesh b'Givon Dom. No, but over there it means more. Because not only was there a city, Givon, the area was called Givon. Shemesh b'Givon Dom, v'yoder b'emek Ayalon. And incidentally, you know, going along the highway, so you really pass Givon, and then later you come to Emek Ayalon, Shalvim, and that whole area is Emek Ayalon. A second thing that says, you know, unfortunately, this is like history repeats itself. The Givonim, according to some of the unfortunate, the Givonim lived near the main highway that connected Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Plishtim. The safe route from Plishtim went through the area of the Givonim. Shaul didn't want the Givonim there because he was concerned that if the Givonim, being at such a strategic place, could very well at some time in the future be a source of grave danger to the Jewish people. He just didn't want them there. He wanted to remove them from there. There are others who say that in the days of Shaul, by the way, so far all of the reasons why he wants to get rid of the Givonim are very, very good and legitimate reasons. Also, during the days of Shaul attempts, and he does remove sorcery from Eretz Yisrael, the Ov and the Idoni, all of the black magic, and the Givonim were very heavily into black magic and sorcery. So therefore, in his sweeping the country of that, he obviously removed many of the Givonim. Other portion will say that Shaul held that the oath that Am Yisrael had made to the Givonim in the days of Yehoshua was not valid. The entire agreement was not valid because it was the result of deceit. There are others who say that when Shaul destroyed Nov, Ir HaKohanim, Nov, the city of the Kohanim, then obviously what it meant was that the Givonim who were in the city were also destroyed. One of the Medrashim says that he wanted them, remember, what did he want? He wanted to know, where is David? So he asked the Nov, Ir HaKohanim, he asked, where is David? And the Givonim also refused to reveal where David is. And because they refused to reveal where David is, he destroyed them. Which means what we have over here is Shaul had treated them poorly. Most of the reasons why he treated them poorly were very legitimate, and they were very positive reasons. So now, what is God responding to? What's God's response? That the famine has come because of Shaul, the house of blood, because of what, that he had killed the Givonim. This is what God says. The next pasuk tells us that God, the king called the Givonim and he spoke to them. We don't know yet what he said to the Givonim. That's going to come in the next pasuk. All we know is that he speaks to the Givonim, and we have the parenthetic comment. The parenthetic comment is, first of all, the Givonim are not part of the Jewish people, but they are the leftover of the Amori. And the Jewish people, it's important to remember that the pasuk in its description of the Givonim says that there was an oath, U'b'nei Yisrael nishbu lahem. The children of Israel had sworn to them that they were going to be part of the Jewish people in one way or another. Shaul wanted to destroy them. Shaul wanted to do it, and he wanted to do it for positive purposes. So now, Vayomer David el HaGivonim. Now we go back. Like, there's something very interesting about the pasuk before already said, Vayikra HaMelech LaGivonim, the king called the Givonim and he said to them. Right? Why does it have to say, Vayomer David el HaGivonim, and David said to the Givonim? There's another problem. Well, what is it that you should have? What should you have asked? Vayomer David. And what did it say in the pasuk before? It said Vayikra HaMelech. Vayikra HaMelech. Alright, let's say, yeah, you're right, there's something personal about it, but the Mepharshim say the following. He wants to treat them, no, he calls them because the responsibility is upon him. He's the king. He's the one who has turned to the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim has responded. God has responded to him. He now has the responsibility as king to deal with the situation. But in his dealing with the situation, he attempts to deal with it on an individual basis as well. Because as we're going to see in Remez, in the Psukim, not only does he deal with the Giv'onim as a group, he attempts to deal with each one individually. Watch. Vayomer David al Givonim. David said to the Givonim, Ma Eselechem, what shall I do for you? Ubame Achaper, with what can I find atonement? Now the word Achaper can have a number of meanings. Achaper can come from the word kofer, which is ransom. He was ready to pay. He was ready to pay them money in order that they should forgive and forget. Achaper, also the word kapara means to wipe clean. Remember, when Yaakov is returning to Eretz Yisrael and Esav is coming toward him, so he sends a mincha, he sends a gift to him, and he says, "Ulai achapra ponav b'mincha ha'olechet lefanai." Maybe I will be able to wipe away the anger from him with this gift that I'm sending. So David asks, "What can I do lechaper?" So that you should bless the inheritance of God. And the inheritance over here, Nachlat Hashem, Eretz Yisrael is called Nachlat Hashem, and Am Yisrael is called Nachlat Hashem. Here, Am Yisrael, in Eretz Yisrael, are suffering. There's a famine in the land, so the people are suffering and the land is suffering. What can I do so that you should bless Nachlat Hashem? And the Givonim said, and now watch. The way in which it is written is Ein Li. The way in which it is to be read is Ein Lanu. Alright, let's read it the way it's supposed to be read. Ein Lanu Kesef Zav Im Shol V'Im Beito. We have no claims of silver or gold against the house of Shol, against Shol and his house. We don't want money. You can't buy us with money. There's nobody in Israel whom we want to put to death. So he said, whatever you say, I will do for you. So now, why the Kri and the Ktiv? We read it, Ein Lanu. But it is written, Ein Li. So the Mepharshim say, after they, as a group, had told David, we have no complaint, or we have no claim of money against Israel, he went and he spoke to each one individually, because he was afraid maybe in public they were embarrassed to say, okay, give us money, and we will forgive. So he went to each one individually. In that respect, he's acting not as Melech, but as David. He goes to each one individually and each one says, Ein Li, I don't have a complaint. I don't have a taina of Kesef Hazav. So he finally asks him, so what can I do? What is left to be done? What can I do for you? They said to the king, Ha'ish asher kilanu, the man who destroyed us, v'asher dimalanu, who had planned and plotted against us. Dima comes from the word dimyon, the one who imagined or who wanted to do. And the word dima can also come from the word obliterate, to totally destroy. Nishmadnu, we've been destroyed. May it yatsev bechol gvul Yisrael, from our standing throughout the boundaries of Israel. He is the man who destroyed us from all of Israel. And you know what we want? Yutan lanu, let there be given unto us shiva anoshim ibanav, seven people from his children, the Hukanum Lashem, we will hang them before God. Begivat Shaul Bechir Hashem. In the house of Shaul, the hall of Shaul was called Givat Shaul. Givat Shaul Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of God. And here, of course, there's a long, long pause, because the king is going to have to agree to something that is so painful for him. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Ani etain, I will give. He's going to give seven people from the family of Shaul. And do you hear how terrible this is? And they're going to be hung by the Givonim. Now let's take another look at the pasuk. It doesn't make sense, of course, to say that the Givonim are referring to Shaul as Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of God. He is their enemy. Not only he is their enemy, take a look at the pasuk before. Vayomru el HaMelech, they said to the king, Ha'ish Asher Kilonu, the man who destroyed us. They won't even mention Shaul by name. He is so despised by them. So therefore they refer to him, that man who wanted to destroy us and who wanted to obliterate us, that we should not be any place within the boundaries of Israel. What they're really saying is they understood. They understood what Shaul's intention was. Shaul's intention was to rid Eretz Yisrael of the Givonim. Yes?
Is there any relationship between his kind of and
I think that there is a relationship. I think that there's a relationship. He is most probably, it is precisely for that reason that he is judged so harshly now. If one would have would want to explain away Shaul's not destroying Amalek, why? Because by Yachmal he had compassion. So it seems that when it's something that relates to what he wants to do, he is able to act without compassion. It was there that he acted with compassion when he shouldn't have. It's more than, in other words, because in his attack upon the Givonim, there could have been a personal element as well. Though the Pasuk, of course, has testified about him, that it was Bekanoto, Lash, Li Yisrael, Uli Yehuda. But you see, so what the point that I want to make is, since in Pasuk 5 they don't refer to Shaul by name, because he is that despised, Ha'ish Asher Kilanu, so therefore, we now have to take a look at Pasuk 6 again. Let's take a closer look. Let 7 people from his children, and don't ask me about the Kri and the Ksiv, because it's heavily laden with digduk. Heavily laden with digduk. But there's a difference. Let 7 people be given from his children, the Hokanum Hashem, and we're going to hang them before God. By the way, these Givonim, one thing they have learned in the 350 years that they have been amongst Jews, to use the name of God. They may even use the name of God when they're going to do something terribly ugly. Doesn't that always happen? That one justifies something as cruel as all of this? That this is all, this is L'shem Shemayim. L'chanun L'shem. We're going to hang them before God. B'givat, now watch these 4 words. B'givat Shaul Bechir Hashem, the chosen one of God. According to many of the Mepharshim, I mean, it's obvious that they could not be referring to Shaul as Bechir Hashem. They despise him. So the Mepharshim say, Baskel Yotza Min Hashamayim, a voice came out of heaven and said, Shaul, he is the Bechir Hashem, he is the chosen one of God. So that takes us one step further. You're not supposed to read these 4 words? There are 5 words. Givat Shaul was the name of his city, the city in which he lived. The name Shaul has to be said twice. They say we're going to hang them for Givat Shaul. And the bat call comes out in Hashemayim and says, Shaul Bechir Hashem. The word Shaul goes 2 ways over here. They're referring to the name of a place, but it's min Hashemayim that he is referred to as Shaul Bechir Hashem. And then, of course, there's the great pause, because here David has to make a decision, and he obviously has no choice but to make this decision. He is forced into making this decision. He has absolutely no choice, because remember, he has been told by the Urim V'Tumim very clearly, why is there a famine in the land? El Shaul, Bel Beit Adamin, Al Asher Heimid et HaGivonim, because he had put the Givonim to death. So it's clearly stated. He knows that this punishment is the result of the house of Shaul. Yes?
I have a question.
I know that. Yes. You have your hand up. What then can you have?
I'm organizing myself. The first of all, number 1,
He already knows.
So what to do? He said that's the reason why. He didn't say do whatever they tell you to do.
But listen to the words. The Urim V'Tumim is condemning the house of Shaul. This is a condemnation of the house of Shaul. And not only is it a condemnation, now first of all, the famine is because of Shaul. His family is referred to as a house of blood. And more specifically, because he put the Givonim to death. So there's nothing left for David to do now. David now is going to have to receive the... he's at the mercy of the Givonim. That's really what the Urim V'Tumim has done. Why he doesn't ask immediately? And instead, of course there's a responsibility. That's why I quoted the Maimon Chazal. Haroi Yisurim, all of a person sees Yisurim, Yifash V'Maisen. You have to first look into yourself. What do you mean go ask him? The Urim V'Tumim was not an easy way out. The Urim V'Tumim was used when B'derech HaTeva, in the normal course of events, we had nowhere to turn. We've already left no stone unturned, and we still can't find out the truth. Then you turn to the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim wasn't a simple, just... You didn't just go and ask for them. No, absolutely not. Yes?
The words of Hashem, could that be the way they were addressing David?
Very difficult. It just doesn't, especially since it comes after the word Shaul, the name Shaul. Shaul is the Bechir Hashem. So it means like this. This Bechir Hashem means that even though the Urim V'Tumim is condemning the house of Shaul, there's such an ambivalence over here. He's called the house of blood. He's put the Givonim to death. On the other hand, the Givonim are condemned as not being Mibnei Yisrael. These people are not good people. Shaul wants to destroy them. Why? Bekanal Toli Li Yisrael V'Yehuda, which is good. The Bat Kol calls him Bechir Hashem. And despite that, the punishment must come. That's really the difficulty with this chapter. Let me at least, let's read how bad it really gets. ויחמור המלך על מפיבושת בן יונתן בן שאול על שבועת השם אשר בן אותם בן דוד ובן יונתן בן שאול. David has compassion upon the son, the remaining son of Yonatan, because there had been an oath in the name of God. He had promised to protect the children of Yonatan. So therefore Mephibosheth, who was the son of Yonatan, the son of Shaul, and there had been an oath between them, between David and Yonatan, the son of Shaul. Vayikach HaMelech, Vayikach HaMelech et shnei b'nei Ritzpa bat Aya asher yolda l'shol. The king took the two sons of Ritzpa bat Aya, who had given birth to Shaul. She was the Pilegesh of Shaul. Et Armoni bet Mephibosheth. This is a different Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was obviously a name in the family. Armoni and Mephibosheth, that Chameshet b'nei Michal bat Shaul, and the five children of Michal bat Shaul. Yes, I see the look on your face. The Gemara asks it, but Michal didn't have children. These were the children of Medav, her older sister, and she was the one who raised them. Michal raised them, and therefore they refer to it as the sons of Michal bat Shaul. Asher yolda la'adriel ben Barzilai ha'micholati. And I would think the children were really born to Medav, but Michal is the one who raised them. Vayitnem b'yad ha-givonim, he gave them into the hands of the givonim. Vayokium b'hor lefnei Hashem, they hung them on the mountain before God. Vayivlu shvatam yachad, all seven died, fell at one time. Vehema humsu b'yemei kotzir barishonim, they were put to death. Don't worry, I see you see the mem over there, you're getting... Alright, we'll take care of it. At the beginning of Katsir Barishonim, the beginning of the early days of the harvest, that's this time of year, Chilat Katsir Saudim, at the beginning of the Katsir Saudim, what else happens at the beginning of Katsir Saudim? Ruth and Naomi return to Bethlehem. at the beginning of the harvest of the what is the barley? That means we're talking this time of year. And look what happens. Now comes an act of such chesed, such mesiris nefesh. Vatikach ritzpa bat aya et hasak. Ritzpa bat aya took a sack canvas. Vatateu la el hatsur mitchilat hakatsir. She spread it out. Tateu is like to pitch a tent. She put it up like a covering. Mitchilat katsir at the beginning of the harvest. Adni tach mayim aleim min hashemayim, until water came pouring down upon them, upon it from the heavens. We're talking about 6 or 7 months until the rainy season, until after Sukkot. And she sat there day and night. V'lo notna ov hashemayim lanuach aleim yomam. She did not permit the fowl of the heaven to rest upon them during the day, that chayat hasadeh laila, or the beasts of the field at night. For 7 months, Nitzba bat Aya sat out there and watched over the bodies. By you got David, it was told to David that Asher also Nitzba bat Aya pilegesh shol. David was told what Nitzba bat Aya the pilegesh shol had done. By Yelach David. David went by Yikachet Atzmot Shaul, Atzmot Yonatan Beno. He took the bones of Shaul and the bones of his son Yonatan. Me'ed Bale Yavesh Gilad, the people of Yavesh Gilad on the other side of the Yarden, they are the ones who had snatched away the bodies of Shaul and Yonatan from the field of battle. Asher Gonvu Otam Be'dechov Beit Shan, because the enemy had hung up those bodies in the streets of Beit Shan. And the people of Yavesh Gilad, who owed a great debt of gratitude to Shaul, because Shaul, in his first great battle, came out in order to save them. Asher Tloyum Sham HaPlishtim, the Plishtim hung them there. Biyom HaKod Plishtim at Shaul BaGilboa, the day that Plishtim smote Shaul in the Gilboa. So what he did now was, he brought the bones of Shaul and Yonatan. Vayam Yisham et Atzmot Shaul et Atzmot Yonatan Beno, Vayasfu et Atzmot HaMukaim, and they gathered together the bones of the ones who had now, the seven who had now been hung. By Yigbru at Atzmot Shaul, V'yonatan V'no, V'eretz Binyamin, they were buried with full honors now in the land of Binyamin, B'tzel on the side of a mountain, V'kever Kish Aviv, in the burial place of his father Kish. V'yasu Kol Asher Tzivo HaMelech, they did everything that the king had commanded. And the Mephoshim said what it means is that they were given a royal funeral. Vayeoter Elokim La'aretz Acharei Chem. Vayeoter Elokim, God agreed or sort of listened to the prayers of the land afterwards. Terrible story, right? By the way, we're going to have another chapter here that's going to end in a similar way. It's going to be Vayeoter Hashem. The last pasuk in, is it the left? If you want to take a look at the last pasuk in Sefer Shmuel Bet, by even Shem, the last pasuk, by even Shem David Mizbeach Hashem, Vayal Olot Ushlamim, Vayeoter Hashem La'aretz, right? There too, there's going to be a plague that is going to come upon the land. There will be a plague that's going to come upon the land, and the only way that God is going to receive them again willingly is going to be by virtue of the fact that David is going to buy Harabayit. He's going to establish an altar there, and that is going to remove the anger of God from the land. But do you see the terrible? How are we going to understand the parasha? In other words, this whole parak, this half a parak that we learn, the story. How do we understand that seven people, who are really innocent people, are going to have to be put to death before God looks at the land willingly again? Seven people from the family of Shaul. So now, what's very interesting, of course, I think it's important to note, two places in this chapter is there talk of an oath. When the prophet describes who are the Givonim. Chapter Pasuk 2. The Givonim lo mibnei Yisrael hema akim yeter amori ubnei Yisrael nizbulahem. There was an oath that the people of Israel had made to the Givonim. There's a second oath that's mentioned, and that is the oath between David and Yonatan. And David keeps the oath of Yonatan. Saul had broken the oath that the Jewish people had made to the Givonim. Seven people lose their lives in a terrible way over here. Chazal, it's a Gemara that says the following, a Gemara in Yevamos. Rashi brings it here, and I believe that there's no way to get through this perek without the Gemara. The Gemara says the following, Amru, our rabbi said, from here we learn, Mutav te'oker ot achat min atara, v'yit kadesh shem shamayim b'fahesir. Better that a letter from the Torah be uprooted, and the name of God be sanctified in public. Shehayu ovrin v'shavin omrin, mati von shalelu, people who went back and forth, people who passed the site and saw the seven bodies, asked, mati von shalelu, what is the nature of these people? Why were they put to death? Omrin lahem, and the response that was given to them was, mi b'nei malachim hein, they are from the sons of kings, they are princes. Umer asu, and what did they do? People would ask, Pashtu yidei yadam begedim gerudim. They stretched out their hands against gedim gerudim. Gedim gerudim means gedim who sort of have schlepped along with the Jewish people. Not gedei tzedek, but people who sort of unwillingly had become part of the Jewish people. And this happened to them because they stretched out their hands against these Gedim. Omrim, the response of people would be, Ein lecha uma re'uya lidavek ba ke'uma zu. There is no people worthwhile becoming part of like this people. What it means is the following. In the final analysis, an oath had been made to the Givonim. So they were the weak, the underprivileged, the second-class citizens, did not give Shaul the right to treat them with such contempt. Malchus must learn that Malchus, it does not have the right over the lives of people indiscriminately. Certainly not against the weak, the ones who are more easily exploited, even if it means, therefore, that seven people are going to lose their lives. But mutav te'oker os achas men ha-Torah, better that one letter of Torah be erased. What letter of Torah? Well, doesn't it say, lo yumsu avos albonim ubonim lo yumsu al avosam, that the children are not to suffer for the sins of the fathers? Over here, what happened was something that was really, according to the law of Torah, something that was unjust. But that which was unjust happened as was done and was sanctioned by God Himself in order to send a message. The message is, you made a promise and an oath to people, and they are weak, they are people you can exploit, people you can easily push around. You can't do that. Shaul would have had to find other ways in order to contain or control the Givonim, but he didn't have a right to kill the Givonim. Just didn't have a right to kill the Givonim. Malchus is not given carte blanche by Klal Yisrael. The nation doesn't give open, go do whatever you want. You have a right to cause pain and suffering and harm and death to anybody you want. Can't do that. So while here is a terrible, terrible story, but the terrible story sends a message to Deir Israel for all generations. You're just going to have to find another way. If you were concerned about the Givonim, then you had to find another way to deal with it. You couldn't deal with it this way. Yes?
The Givonim learned nothing more than how to tell it's a plot. It's something they liked, but they didn't do anything in terms of...
Right, but remember, Shaul Shaul is afraid that they may very well be a fifth column. Shaul is concerned that having people like this living near astride the main highways between enemy territory and Eretz Yisrael may pose a great danger. Then you know what he had to do? If he wanted to transfer them, then he would have had to transfer them by paying them pichuyim. That's all. He would have had to do it in some other way. But he had no right lahamid et hagevonim. That's what it was. I mean, this is a powerful message. A powerful message. You can't just... There's no free ticket for a king. And all of Klal Yisrael is going to suffer. And remember, what kind of a Klal Yisrael are we talking about? Do you understand what kind of Klal Yisrael we're talking about? For 3 years, there are no Ovdei Aveda Zarah. There are no Ovdei Aveda. There are no people who have pledged money to charity and didn't give it. We're talking about an awesome people. So what you have to understand is something else. Not only are we speaking about an unusual people, it's because we're talking about an unusual people that God makes unusual demands of them. I don't think a demand of this would have been made of another generation. But this kind of a generation has got to learn that there's an absolute sense of morality, and the ruler does not have the right to simply reject it. I mean, it's a powerful message. It has to be understood within the context of Chazal. Outside of Chazal, there's no way to understand it. And then the great heroine. And you know, at some point we have to be able to point out the tremendous things that were done by Chitzpah Basaya. 7 months! 7 months she... And remember, the Ot Achat Min HaTorah that is uprooted is the fact that they were not buried. They were not buried. But the purpose of their not being buried is that people should learn. Malchus Yisrael cannot exploit the weakness. Sure. Their not being buried was part of the lesson. But once the rainy season came and David hears what Ritzvah Bataya had done, so then he makes a decision that the lesson has been learned and it's all over. Huh? No. Because remember, the Navi condemns the Givonim and calling them, saying, "No, that they are not Bnei Yisrael, and therefore they demanded an eye for an eye." And not only demanded an eye for an eye, there are two shitas. One shita says that Shaul killed one of the Givonim, so that they got seven for one. And the other shita says, "Yes, he killed seven Givonim." Two chot ve'etzim, two shor ve'mayim, a shamish, a chazan, and a sofer. Seven people in the city of Nov. There are seven people in the city of Nov. And these seven people were killed by Shaul. And for that, Klal Yisrael paid.